how's the weather in your neck of the woods? Thank you for. This is WWGH 107.1 FM radio. The name of the show is called A Voice of a People with Linda Sims. And you have tuned in to 107.1 FM radio. Started out with technical difficulties here on Monday, November the 30th. Can you believe we're getting ready to march into December 2020? Can you believe it? Wow, what a year we have had. 2020. That will go down as one of the, I don't even know what to name it, the year that we've had. Very challenging, that's for sure. In my lifetime, definitely. Okay, once again, this is called A Voice of a People. My name is Linda Sims. And of course, you are on the right station, 107.1 FM radio. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download a free app called TuneIn and search WWGH and take advantage of the list of talk show programs we have to offer you, and I'm certain you will find one to your liking. One more option, you can call in during any show live, and this show is live from now until the top of the hour, 5 p.m. and call 740-383-9944 if you have any questions or if you would like to make any comments. I need to share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson at 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have a free produce every third Saturday of every month. That will take place December the 19th at the above mentioned address, 582 Lee Street. They start at 12 noon until 2 p.m. We have Inspect Ohio LLC, your one call home inspection company with 27 years of experience working for you. Location, LaRue, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-0939. Last but not least, Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist LLC, 1325 North Main Street in Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. And those of you who faithfully listen to A Voice of a People, and if this is your first time, welcome to the show. Thank you. I have a thought for today, and it's titled The Law of Karma. And you know, when a lot of people get to talking about karma, then you have to think about what have I done that wasn't so good, and what are the things that I've done that are good that may be coming back my way, right? You hear people say karma. Yeah, and that's what they mean when they say karma, when you've done something that they really don't like. Maybe you hurt their feelings or something, and they'll say, well, you'll get your karma. It's going to come back to you. And that's true. This is titled, once again, The Law of Karma. Spirituality teaches me to see my responsibility and what causes I am setting in motion by my thoughts, my words, and actions. I just have to fulfill my responsibilities, and the rights will automatically follow because they are the effect. This may not happen immediately, but it is inevitable. The law of cause and effect, action and reaction. The law of karma is an integral part of spirituality. It gives us a basis on which to make right choices and create a beautiful future for ourselves and the world around us. Does that sound like karma to you? Spirituality teaches me to see my responsibility and what causes I am setting in motion by my thoughts. Did you know that you can cause things to be set in motion by your thoughts? Definitely words and actions. I guess we better be a little bit more careful, because we're sending our vibes and don't really even have to say anything, right? Okay. Now, this is November the 30th, 2020, the last day of November. Looking at December the 1st, tomorrow. Okay. It's snowing. We are expected to receive, I'm not doing a weather report, but we're expected to receive 3+ inches of snow here in Marion, Ohio. And I just hope this does not mean that this is our Christmas snow. It's been at least 6 years since we've actually had snow on Christmas Day in Marion, Ohio. So I know I'm not the only one wishing that we can have snow for Christmas Day at least. Okay. So I'm just hoping we don't get all this snow, and when Christmas comes, there's none. None. Alrighty. So we're going to be praying for snow for Christmas, right? Right. Okay. And I thought I started with, how's the weather in your neck of the neighborhood? Some places in Ohio, I heard, are to receive up to 8 inches of snow. Okay. So, I'm waiting on my guest, who's supposed to be here, and hopefully he'll come soon. But maybe we can talk about some other things while we're waiting on him. So, I was going to say, thank God the election is behind us, but we're not even sure about that, are we? Because I hear that, you know, they're still trying to overturn the election, and some people are still hoping that it will be overturned and that the president that's in the White House now will remain there, okay? Not sure. Okay. But hi. He's here. I knew he was coming. How are you, Tyler?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, okay. He's here, everybody. All right. I was just trying to find something else to talk about other than the snow.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness.
Isn't it beautiful out there?
Oh, it absolutely is. Which microphone am I going to?
Either one.
I'll go all on here. Okay.
Yeah, they should be all on.
Okay.
Wow, I didn't want snow so early. I want Christmas snow.
Oh, I know. You know, I was inside, I was over at Mount Gilead Elementary Park Avenue today, and the kids, I couldn't get them to pay attention for anything. They were just watching the snow outside, you know. And they said over and over, they're like, look how beautiful it is.
Yes,
they were absolutely right. Oh,
whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, yes it is. My. Just as long as we get some Christmas Day, I'll be okay.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's been close to 5 or 6 years since we've had snow in Marion, Ohio for Christmas.
For Christmas. Wow. Yeah, I haven't been keeping count.
Yeah, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, already said, how are you today?
Yes, yeah. Hey, I'm doing well. The snow is beautiful, so happy to be here. Yeah, I can't ask for much more.
I'm glad you could make it. Your last name is Butler?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me a little bit more about you, because I only met you in passing. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've hadn't had much time to talk and converse. So I grew up in Mount Gilead.
Okay.
Graduated Mount Gilead High School in 2009. Went off to college after that, so graduated the Ohio State University in agricultural communications and animal science, and then have a minor in business as well. And then after that, I really got away from agriculture and got more into conservation and environmental work.
Okay.
Started working with the education department at the Wilds, part of the Columbus Zoo down in Zanesville.
Okay.
That's a beautiful spot. Have you ever been down there?
No.
It's amazing. So it's 10,000 acres. And big. It's all, oh yeah, it's massive. And it's all reclaimed strip mine land.
Okay.
And so they're doing a lot of revitalization work, restoration ecology, stuff like that. But the really cool thing about the wilds is they have a 5,000 acre pasture. And okay. In that pasture, they have large ungulate grazing animals. Things like giraffes and rhinos, elands, a lot of antelope, deer species, and all of these species, they have one thing in common, basically, and that's that they're either threatened or endangered in the wild.
Oh, endangered species.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Okay. And so they do a lot of propagation work with those species as well. So they're trying to breed those animals and then put them back
multiply
in the wild.
Multiply more. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So. Okay. A fantastic organization. It's a nonprofit out there, and it's amazing. They also run summer camps. I had played a big role in the summer camps out there. I have a good friend that runs that program now, their education department. They're visiting classrooms. Well, they're virtually visiting classrooms now. Right. But, you know, in years past, they would come into classrooms. They can talk careers in animal management or restoration ecology, or they can talk the animals that they have. Which is pretty amazing. After that, I moved up to Michigan for a few years. That stayed up north. Lived in Lansing, working for the Michigan United Conservation Clubs. That's an umbrella organization for clubs like your rod and gun clubs or your conservation clubs or your fishing clubs.
Okay.
And we represented them at the state level. So in legislation and policy work, doing a lot of work with like litter prevention and hunting, fishing rights, things like that.
Right.
And I also ran their summer camp program up there. That was in Chelsea, Michigan at the Cedar Lake Outdoor Education Center. Awesome. That was 230 acres. So a whole lot of land out there. Yeah. Yeah. But, we put through about 400 kids in the summer, and that summer camp, certified them in hunter safety so they could go out and get a license. Wow. and partake in conservation, hands-on conservation. And we did a lot of science out there as well, a lot of hard conservation science. From Michigan, I went out to Massachusetts. I lived on Cape Cod for a year with the National Environmental Education Development Academy. So I was a teacher out there. And we taught a lot of natural sciences. That was a super cool program. So that ran throughout the school year.
Okay.
Fifth grade based. And so we would take every fifth grader on the Cape. Their class would come out to, it was an old Coast Guard station. We'd put the girls upstairs, boys stayed downstairs. On the mid level, we had a kitchen. We had just kind of like an education area.
Right.
And we would spend a whole week just talking natural environmental science, which was awesome. We also took them up to Provincetown. Have you ever been to Cape Cod?
No.
It's beautiful.
I was going to ask, what is that like?
Absolutely beautiful. Oh,
I've heard a lot about it, Cape Cod, yeah.
Yeah, I really can't do it justice with words.
That's not where Martha's Vineyard is, is it?
Martha's Vineyard is south of Cape Cod.
Okay.
Yeah, just south of Cape Cod. So, okay. So a really similar location there. Thoreau wrote a lot about Cape Cod, and his writings really do it justice, a lot more than I could, but he was fantastic. But most of it, at least the shoreline, is national seashore, right?
Okay.
So it's totally undeveloped. It's what a beach should look like.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And a lot of history out there too, a lot of American history.
Oh yeah.
You know, like I said, we would bust the kids up to Provincetown. And talk to them about the Pilgrims Landing there and the interactions they were having with the Wampanoag tribe and just kind of what was going on
right.
in, you know, early, mid-1600s. So,
how long
yeah.
ago was that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Long time ago.
It was a while ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going into 2021.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like I loved the Cape and would have stayed out there. But, you know, the winters are rough out there.
Are they?
Basically, everything shuts down. Yeah, all the shops, all the restaurants, it shuts down. They open up for tourist season,
okay.
right? Which makes sense. I think the population on the Cape increases by like a million people during tourist season.
Tourist
yeah,
season.
So when I was driving in, there was a bunch of traffic going out. Okay. And it was about the time that that transition was happening, right? School's starting, everybody's got to get back to, you know,
right.
their residential homes and get their kids to school. So, but it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful out there. And I considered staying out there for quite a while, but I didn't know if I could do another winter with nobody around. I like, you know, the person-to-person interaction too much. So I started looking around this area for something to come back to.
Okay.
I wanted to come back and, you know, see some family and see some friends that
right.
I hadn't seen in several years. And so I had been looking around, and luckily one of my good friends, Emily Orivides, she's with Eco Center over in Caledonia.
Okay.
And I had worked with her for several years doing some education programming and just building up that incredible business out there. And she had said, she had mentioned there was a nature center that was looking for a program director. It was kind of fresh on its feet, didn't really have, you know, a whole lot of direction, and
right.
wanted some direction. And so that's how I ended up at Teradice Nature Center.
Right so. Place at the right time.
Right place at the
and
right
know
time.
Know the right people, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, the networking. I, you know, whenever I meet somebody just graduated from high school or, you know, fresh into college, it's like, just go out, join some clubs, have some interactions with people, right? Do that networking, because you never know, you know, right place at the right time.
That's
you
true.
Never know where you're going to be, where they're going to be, what they're looking for, what you're looking for.
That's
and at
so
some
true.
Point, yeah, you know,
paths cross.
It's going to intersect.
Yes,
yep.
Wow. Wow. Sounds like you have an interesting life. It does sound like that.
I've tried to,
like
yeah.
You're bored at all.
No. I try to stay out of boredom as much as possible. Try to keep busy. Yeah.
Right. And dealing with the wildlife. Wow.
Yeah.
You was talking about some of the wildlife endangered species.
Absolutely.
Now, does it has to do with a lot of hunting?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So there are definitely species that have fallen into trouble because of overhunting. And you see that a lot, you know, in continents like Africa, continents like Asia, definitely.
Right, right.
You know, species like, all of your rhino species, really. There's a belief in Asia, in Africa, that, you know, those rhino horns, that keratin, there's like some sort of magical properties to the horns. And
oh, okay.
so they put that in a lot of their medicines, right? And so, you know, it's really just a job of education, right? To stop that stuff from happening and to prevent it from happening. But it's hard to break tradition as well, you know? So it's a lot of trying to find the right verbiage, right? The right words to not be insulting in trying to educate,
okay.
which can happen, right?
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. And even right here in our own backyard, there were issues with overhunting for a long, long time. Something like the wild turkey. The wild turkey, there were probably, you know, 30 million individuals.
Absolutely.
And we're getting back up there in number. There's a lot of wild turkey around. But they had been cut down to about 10,000 individuals at one point.
Okay.
Just pockets of wild turkey in North America. Yeah. And luckily, you know, it's almost, it's just odd to think about with the overhunting being the problem. And then you had nature enthusiasts and hunters, right, that really appreciated that natural resource like
right.
the turkey,
right?
And so they came together and, you know, with state regulations on top of that and conservation efforts, you know, they really do a lot of work to bring those animals back, you know, from the brink of extinction. So
yeah, well, what would we do for Thanksgiving if we didn't have turkey?
Yeah, well, luckily we have a lot of domestic turkey now, which is, you know, that's what you're buying at the grocery store.
Right.
You know, there's nothing quite like a wild turkey. Yeah, for Thanksgiving.
Wow. I don't think I've ever had one since you put it that way.
Yeah.
It always comes out of the grocery store.
Yeah.
But I know when I visit my daughter in Wooster, Ohio, they're
yes.
everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
They cross the street, and they're just everywhere.
They are. Yeah, they're moving into a lot of residential areas. And that's something that, you know, we can talk about right now. It's just, you know, the turkeys kind of went from extinction. We did a lot of work to bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we have to work on now is maintaining that population, right? That animal management, a piece of it. And that can be tough. And a lot of how we manage animals in North America is through hunting. And so you can have your feelings on hunting, and I definitely don't blame you either way, however you feel about it. But you do have to recognize that it is how we manage a lot of those populations.
Right. Well, and it's a sport.
It is a sport.
I understand that part of it's a sport, but
it is a sport. And a lot of people, a lot of people treat it that way, especially with deer hunting. You look for the trophy. But also at the same time, it feeds families,
Yes.
And if you appreciate the outdoors and you appreciate having public spaces to go to kayak or hike or bird or, whatever you like to do outdoors, a lot of that money comes from hunting. You have to buy a license. You have to buy permits, right? There's a tax on guns and ammunition that goes back into a wildlife budget. So, and even when we do work for, so if you're doing, if you're talking about turkeys, the Turkey Federation, which has chapters across the United States, they are enthusiastic turkey hunters. But they raise a lot of money and they use a lot of these funds to increase or just kind of upgrade turkey habitat. And when you upgrade turkey habitat, right, you have these indirect effects in benefiting other species as well, which is always fantastic. Yeah. So you have that direct target species. You want to increase turkey population. And then that, obviously, you have offshoots of indirect effects as well. Yeah.
So what category would you place raccoons and groundhogs and those things are those pests?
Yeah.
Skunks, they've come into our domain, like in the city now.
Sure.
We have such a problem with them. And you can't even find anybody that wants to trap them anymore.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, trapping is a lost sport. It really is. And, there is a benefit to it. And again, same with hunting. You can have your feeling on it, but you have to think about these natural resources that are coming from something like trapping. All of the trappers that I've ever known have been super resourceful. They use every bit of that animal, all right? Even if it's a beaver, they'll eat the beaver meat, right?
Really?
They don't let it go to waste. Oh, yeah. And then passing off skulls, the trappers that I know, they're so interested in educating the youth on these animals, right? They want the youth to appreciate these animals. And so
I would in somebody else's yard.
Yeah. And so we get a lot of our education materials, like beaver skulls or coyote skulls or something like that,
right?
Which we can use to educate from trappers or hunters.
I didn't even think about the coyote. Are they out of control?
Some people would say yes. Yeah, let's go back to coyote.
Okay.
With trapping, I just want to just make one more point there.
Go ahead.
Which is there's a lot of animosity against or for wearing furs. And I understand that. It can be uncomfortable and it can look uncomfortable. But when you're talking a fur coat, you're talking a coat that's going to last 40-50 years, if you take care of it. A lot of the coats that we buy, the winter coats or the clothing that we buy, it's fast fashion, right? These things are not meant to last.
Oh, no, definitely not.
And so you can have a winter coat for 2, if you're lucky, 3 years, and then you're on to the next one. And what are those coats made of? They're made of oil-based materials. They're plastic. Even the fur linings, it's all plastic.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so once that coat is made, that plastic's out there. And if you're interested in conservation and the environment, the number one thing on our to-do list is to get rid of plastics. Use as less plastic as possible.
Wow.
So
I did not know that.
There's a big environmental toll when it comes to wearing plastics, basically. I mean, that every time you wash that, microplastics go into the waterways, right? And it affects the fish that you maybe eat or the macroinvertebrates that are maybe, the bed of the river. So it's affecting what we have. So feel how you want to feel about hunting and trapping, but there are great benefits to those activities. Yeah. You just got to look a little bit further, you know?
So does that have to do with, like, your trash bags and that's plastic? And
so trash bags I would put kind of on the other end. That's almost a good plastic.
Okay.
And I say that, kind of hold my breath a little bit. Trash bags are almost a good plastic, especially when you buy quality trash bags mm-hmm. that aren't going to bust open. If you're recycling and you're only throwing away, things that belong in the garbage.
Right.
Things that can't be recycled, things that can't be reused, especially things like liquids, right?
Yeah.
If you put them in a, pretty hefty, pretty durable plastic bag, a garbage bag, and that goes to the dump, well, then everything is kind of contained to that one bag.
Right.
And so those liquids, right, if it's full of toxins or what have you, nutrients that if they get into the waterway are gonna be detrimental. If they're sealed in that trash bag, then that's more beneficial than not being sealed
that's
in the trash bag,
I guess. True.
Yeah.
That's true.
So it can go either way. You know, it's not a total like light switch situation where it's on or it's off, it's good or it's bad, right? There are
not
some
like
benefits.
Our clothing and our coats are made out of plastic.
Yeah.
That blows me away.
Yeah. And you know what?
That.
A good fur coat is expensive, right? And so you have to take that into account as well. Not everybody's going to be able to afford a fur coat. And so the fast fashion that we do have is beneficial to a lot of people, and just that, you know, these clothes are affordable.
That's true.
You just have to weigh everything.
Because even a nice wool coat is kind of expensive, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And that's coming from what, sheep? Goats?
Coming from sheep, yeah.
Okay.
From sheep. Yep. And there are a lot of diseases and infections, you know, sheep can get if they're not shorn. And if you are, a lot of people think, you know, oh, you want to keep the wool on the sheep for the winter. But if you're keeping your sheep in a barn in the winter, mm-hmm. A lot of times you do want to shear them. You do want to shear them so their body heat kind of escapes and it all kind of radiates back to them inside the barn, right? So they're kind of sharing their body heat. Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah,
it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had that much going on, Tyler.
Animal resources are so very interesting.
Wow, you're educating us today. Wow.
Yeah, I think we're talking about coyotes.
Yeah, we were.
Now, coyotes are interesting. Now, coyotes are not native to Ohio. They're species that moved.
I heard they were on the rise in Ohio.
They are. We have really interesting species in Ohio. We have some coy wolves, and then we have the eastern coyotes.
Okay.
Eastern coyotes have mostly dog DNA and coyote DNA.
Okay. So a coyote is not a wolf.
A coyote is not a wolf. It's a close cousin to the wolf. We don't have any wolves in Ohio. There are some wolves in surrounding states, especially up in now they'd have to cross the
border.
Mack Bridge, yeah.
Right.
But they're up in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. There's a lot of wolves up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they are currently on the endangered species list. Although their populations are really improving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as coyotes, you know, coyotes not native to Ohio, they moved westward when things like overhunting for bears and bobcat and cougars, things like mm-hmm. that, when we basically eradicated all of our large carnivorous creatures, mm-hmm. right, it left an empty space kind of in the food pyramid, right? So we needed a tertiary consumer to come in and kind of clean up everything mm-hmm. in a roundabout way. And so coyotes kind of came in and took that position in the food chain.
Okay.
So coyotes, while they can be, I guess, annoying, and we kind of find them as a nuisance, they do have a place in Ohio right now. And we're going to have to increase other predator populations if we want to see a decrease in coyote populations. You know,
wow.
So we're going to have to see more bears. We're going to have to see more cougars. We're going to have to see more bobcat. Just kind of the way it is. If we want to see less coyote, we're going to have to give them some competition. And what
they
saw.
Bears.
Yeah. And now the black bear is, you know, native to Ohio. And we still got black bears. I think there was one. Oh, gosh. What was it? This year is all kind of melding together. Was it in the summer? We had a black bear spotting in Lancaster, which is pretty nice. We had our first ever bobcat sighting, or at least confirmed sighting in Caledonia.
Really? That's
Over
close.
in, yeah, I think it was in January that happened.
Okay,
Yeah.
okay.
And the thing about bobcats and all big cats in general is they have a large kind of perimeter. They have a large, it's almost like a circle that they kind of travel, especially the males.
Okay.
So whether or not that cat is still in Marion County, I don't know. I would say probably not. It's probably just.
Yeah, Caledonia is Marion County in it. Oh,
Yep.
wow.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's not. Let's hope it's
Yeah.
gone.
Oh, bobcats, I would say not something to worry about too much. It's a cat that maybe comes up to my knee. And they're mostly looking for rabbits and rodents. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Well, that helps that population then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Rodents. Because they're on the rise in like California, they said they're out of
Rodents.
control. Yeah.
Yeah, well,
Because of the food, you
there's no
know.
predators. Yeah, we are kind of extirpating a lot of predators, and there's a
That's
lot of work
neat.
going towards that
That's
right now
neat how you
too.
use one species to control the other.
Yeah,
That's
it
really
really is.
neat.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And you know what they found in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan is when they increased the wolf population, because there were a lot of coyotes up there as well. When they
Right.
increased the wolf population, the coyote population just plummeted, right?
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, coyotes will not compete against a wolf. They want out of
Hmm.
there. Yeah.
Whoa,
Yeah.
they're pretty tough then,
Oh yeah,
wolves.
the wolves. Yeah, so a coyote weighs in. I'd say a pretty good coyote is, there's a good range in the weight there, but probably 40 to 50 pounds. You might get one a little bit heavier than that. But a wolf, you're looking at well over 100 pounds.
They get that
Oh
big?
yeah, they are massive animals. I went to the UP. No, it was a couple of years ago. We went up to hike through the Porcupine Mountains,
Okay.
and get up to Lake Superior, which is a trip I would encourage everybody to go take. Go see Lake Superior. It is absolutely beautiful. Just
I bet.
super duper clear. Yeah, rocky shores, amazing. Pictured rocks is amazing, and great to kayak out there as well. But
You
we.
kayak too?
Yeah, I love to kayak. Kayak fishing is an incredible sport. I absolutely love it. Yeah,
Okay.
there's nothing quite like, because when you get to a body of water and you're kind of looking around, picking your spots, looking for any debris in the water that might hold, some sport fish in there, you're limited in where you can go,
Right.
And so shore fishing is great, and I still love shore fishing, but getting in a kayak and taking, pole and tackle out there. And casting on the other side of reeds or pads or what have you, it really changes the sport. Yeah, it's a lot of fun
Okay.
to get out there for sure. So,
Wow.
but yeah, when we went out to the Porcupine Mountains up there in the UP for a little bit of a backpacking trip up there, we didn't see a wolf on trail, but we saw a wolf. Kind of on the side of the road as we were going through, and there's something super primitive about. Seeing a wolf, seeing a
What
wild
did
dog
your
that
heart
size. Oh
jump?
yeah, your heart starts going. So, oh yeah, it's nothing like anything we have
Like that
here.
little fear is in you,
Yeah, a coyote you can
yeah.
see, it's kind of a medium-sized dog, and
Right.
they can be a nuisance, and they're more of a nuisance for pets, which can be an issue. But honestly, I mean the coyote, any wild animal, they're just trying to survive.
Right.
And
And a wolf
when
has presence.
Oh, the wolf has presence. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize it got that big.
Yeah. Oh, they're massive. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
When we were on trail, we saw a pack of coyotes. It wasn't very large. It was maybe four of them. But it was early morning. We had heavy dew. There was a lot of fog, and we were hiking through the trail. And every now and then I'd see a shadow, just dart from one tree to another. And you kept looking over, and I was talking to everybody. I was like, "You see that over there? And they're like, "No, we don't see anything." So I thought I was going crazy there for a second. And then I just happened to catch one on the other side of the trail as it darted to another tree. And a couple coyotes kind of following us around. Didn't cause any trouble. Mostly
Right.
curious,
Oh,
they're
yeah. Oh,
just kind of
yeah.
wondering what people are doing out there on that trail. So,
Wow.
Yeah, it's it's great. Hey, get outside. You're gonna see all kinds of stuff.
This sounds interesting. Yeah. It just really does. What about? Do you run across any snakes or anything out
there?
Oh
my goodness, I love snakes. I wish I saw more snakes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
We don't need more in Ohio, though.
Oh, we absolutely do. Absolutely. Yeah. So probably the most common snake you're gonna find in Ohio is gonna be the garter snake, the eastern garter snake, which is absolutely harmless.
How big do they get?
The garter snakes get about 20 inches or so, which is a big snake. I mean, that's a big snake for most people. But like I said, totally harmless. Actually, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. Most of the snakes you're going to find in Ohio, totally harmless. There are 25 snake species in Ohio, 14 of which are endangered or threatened.
Okay.
And inside of those 14 endangered or threatened species of snakes, that's where you have your venomous snakes that we have in Ohio. We have three.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We have the copperhead, which would probably be the most common around here.
But
venomous,
it's venomous
snake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but really, you don't see them. You really don't. And they're more interested in avoiding you than making contact with you. When you come across people that have been bitten by a snake, you know, a lot of times it's like in this area, right? Your forearm,
right?
Or your hand, and that's because people are messing with those snakes. That's when you get bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's totally self-inflicted, honestly. So we have the copperhead. That's probably what you're going to find most around here. Copperheads prefer rocky cliff sides. They like to sun themselves a lot. They're moving through the rocks for prey. So even though it's the most common we're going to find around here, we're not going to see it around here.
Right.
Yeah, especially,
'cause we have the trails out there.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in like the Great Prairie area, you're not going to see any. You're not going to see any in the plains. The other two venomous snakes we have a larger rattlesnake. We have the timber rattlesnake. And then we have a very small rattlesnake, the Massasauga or the Black Swamp rattlesnake. It's a very small rattlesnake. And you're going to find that in really boggy areas. So like swamps and places like that.
Okay.
So really, you know, you're not going to find a lot of venomous snakes in the Bi-County area, Marion and Morrow. But you will find some really cool snakes. Like I said, the Eastern Garter is a fantastic snake, and they calm down pretty quickly. So I try to handle snakes when they're around, especially when there's an education group around, especially kids.
Kids
learn to be afraid of snakes, and there's really no reason to be afraid of snakes, especially in this area. But the Eastern Garters are great education animals. They're really docile. They calm down in your hands, and they handle being pet really, really well, especially if you're being a wild animal.
Okay.
We also have really small snakes that you might see around, like the northern brown snake, very, very tiny snake. I don't think it gets more than maybe 9 inches, but it's very, very thin. You'll see them crossing the road a lot. Some of the larger snakes we have around here, the black rat snake, that's the largest snake in Ohio.
It is. How big does that get?
There are records of black rat snakes getting to be about 8 feet or so, which is a long snake. That's a long
that
snake,
is.
Yeah. But they're climbers, so they spend a lot of time in old barn rafters, is where they hang out a lot, and then trees. You'll see them climbing trees quite a bit,
yeah,
too.
That's a
yeah,
large,
oh, they're great climbers.
Large.
Yeah, great, great climbers. But again, non-venomous, and they are not interested in being around you or I. I mean, they just really don't want anything to do with us. I saw a lot more in southern Ohio than I do here, but really a fantastic snake. What else do we have around here? Oh my goodness, we have black racers around here. That's a really fast, really fast snake.
Okay.
They've got they're a black body, black dorsal side, but their belly's all white. It's a really, really beautiful snake. There are stories of racer snakes chasing after people. That's just not what they do. Yeah, they're trying to avoid people as well, and their method of avoiding is they live in burrows. And so their method of avoiding people is to get to their burrow as fast as possible.
Right.
And if you happen to get in, if you happen to orient yourself between that black racer snake and the burrow, that snake's going to find the fastest way to its burrow. And
right.
if you are in between the burrow and the snake,
you're in its way.
You're in its way.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going to try to get to the burrow. So I hear a lot about, especially working in the school system with kids, I hear a lot about parents and grandparents taking a shovel to a snake's head. I just hate those stories.
Oh,
I hate those stories. Snakes
I'm
are
sorry,
so,
Tyler.
So good for us. We talked about rodents getting out of control. You know, snakes are directly,
right.
Yeah, involved in maintaining those populations for rodents. Yeah, so
wow.
they are so necessary. They are so necessary for us. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Right. So how has the pandemic affected what you do?
Yeah.
Has it or has it not?
It's been really interesting. It's been definitely an odd year to try and kickstart a nonprofit out there in Caledonia. So I came in officially in November of 2019, and
okay.
we got rolling. So we started scheduling programming. We started scheduling speakers to come out. We started scheduling some improvement projects around the property. And a lot of the speakers we had to cancel this year, which
yeah.
has been a shame. And basically what we had to do was we had to pivot from on-site activities over at Teradice to virtual materials at Teradice. So
right.
I spent a long time during, you know, everybody was talking about their quarantine projects. My quarantine project was video editing. I was trying to figure out how to edit videos and work with sound and get the right shots. And so that was what I was doing pretty much through March into April. And then we started really hammering out some virtual materials. So we've got a YouTube channel, and we try and keep it just to the brim with materials.
Right.
So we've got a couple different variety of videos. One of the videos that we do, and we try to do it bi-weekly, is Who's That Sound? And so that's taking a bird call, or maybe a red fox yelp, or chipmunk chips.
Chipmunks.
And we try and put it to a video and give you, you know, information on what these animals are and what
right.
they sound like. Because a lot of times, you know, we get the question of, oh, I keep hearing this sound, and somebody will imitate a sound, and it sounds like everybody else imitating their sound. And it's like, oh, well, maybe you check out some of these videos.
Mm-hmm.
we also do Naturally Curious, which is where we just come up with a question like, why do birds sing when it, or after the rain?
Right.
And we just try and answer that question, looking at research, and just, you know, make it as entertaining as possible. We have videos for kids. Those are Field Journal Fridays. It comes with a Field Journal worksheet
right.
where, and the target demographic there is about 4th through 5th grade, but it comes paired with about a 15-20 minute video of, you know, an introduction, kind of a lecture type with, you know, plenty of graphics and things like that. Like I said, introduction, and then we go through this field journal sheet and just kind of help the kids fill it out and get the kids outside. I mean, that's really the goal there.
Yeah, that's, and I'm hoping 2021 is going to be different than 2020.
I hope so too. Yeah,
yeah.
I hope so too. And you know what? I think I have a good feeling about it. I do.
Well, I guess we have to.
We certainly do. Yeah,
we have
it
to
just
hope
takes,
for the best.
It just takes everybody playing their part, you know.
Yes.
If we want to be open and doing things and enjoying each other and getting outside and going to events, you know, we have to take the necessary precautions to do so.
Absolutely. And Tyler, we are out of time already, but I have so enjoyed what you do.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much. Yeah,
thank
I'll have
you
to come back.
And sharing.
Yeah.
Yes, you will. It was just interesting what you do. I just, the foxes and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I'm afraid of them, but I
yeah.
still like to know what's going on in
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Type of the world, right?
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, the place for holiday fun. For legendary actress and
yeah.
star of the hit TV series Hee-Haw, Lulu Roman,
perfect.
Doing Christmas cornfield jokes. Lulu, what kind of music do elves listen to?
Rep.
Lulu, what is a snowman's favorite breakfast?
Ice Krispies.
Lulu, what says O-O-O?
Santa walking backwards. Ow, ow, ow.
Which of Santa's reindeer has bad manners?
Rudolph.
Lulu, what does Santa suffer from if he gets stuck in a chimney?
Ooh, that'd be claustrophobia.
Claustrophobia.
Yeah.
That's a good one, yes.
Claustrophobia.